following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Hi, this is Toby Philpott. I was inside Jabba the Hutt.
And I'm John Coppinger. I was the clay mechanic for Jabba the Hutt, otherwise known as the Sludge Nudger.
And you are listening to Nerdy Show.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. I'm your host, Cap, and this is a Nerdy Show microsode. That's where we discuss a topic that's been chosen by you. Joining me for this discussion is
Laval, the Nerdy Show live programming director.
And Doug from Ghostbusters and Nerdy Show.
And Matt from Nerdy Show.
Since Jurassic World is coming out in a couple weeks, June 12th, we thought we'd take on a discussion that goes back to that franchise's origin, because Big Bad Shadow Man would like us to talk about perfect pairings of CGI and practical effects. Now, while our feelings on Jurassic World are definitely split down the middle, as seen in the debates we've published between Doug and Laval, which we'll link to on this episode's page, we can all agree that when it comes to perfectly pairing CGI and practical effects, Jurassic Park has got to be the first conversation you have.
Because we will talk about it the whole time. So, yeah.
I think it would be fair, instead of just spiel about Jurassic Park for like 3 hours, if we maybe consider using Jurassic Park as the benchmark.
There you go. Yeah.
If you want a refresher for not just how good the pairing of CGI and practical effects are in Jurassic Park, but also how truly revolutionary it was, last year, the Academy Motion Pictures put together a really great, about 9-minute featurette on exactly that, and we'll link to it on this episode's page. It's really good, definitely worth checking out.
It was the first major CGI, like, creatures and stuff.
Quite frankly, no one has done it as well since then. We cannot truly expect that from any other film.
Right, so 10 is Jurassic Park.
Preposterous as, yeah. as the statement is.
That is the perfect.
Right.
That is the perfect that we're trying to achieve.
Peter Jackson's first three Lord of the Rings films made a decent effort.
They were really good. I wouldn't say perfect, but they were really, really good. I'd say 8.5, 9?
Yeah, 9. Is that fair, Matt?
9's fair.
Yeah, 9's pretty good. I will say the Two Towers battles, I think, scales back to an 8 by now. If you've watched it recently, it's a little, you know.
When you say perfectly blend, like perfectly blending it, it's like, oh, because it's photorealistic, or is it just because it's believable?
There were moments in the Lord of the Rings, original Lord of the Rings trilogy, where they used the miniatures and bigatures that did perfectly blend CGI, practical effects, compositing techniques, and all that, many separate elements to create one scene that you would never question once.
Right.
So then if we're going to talk about if Jurassic Park's a 10, then can we say 1 is Escape from New York, that submarine scene where the submarine pops up out of the water and they didn't even like add fake water?
I would say more like Jaws 3D.
Whoa.
Is number 1.
That's not fair.
What do you mean?
How is it not fair?
I mean, that's just like the lowest.
Yeah. That's saying that's lower than Escape from New York.
Oh.
So
okay.
What are we grading on, a 0 to 11 scale? I mean, like...
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
I would say Escape from New York is a better example of using a practical effect to pretend to be a CG effect when he's coming in over the World Trade Center, and it's like that computer grid of the towers, when in reality, it's just a model of the towers with neon tape around it.
I just realized I was thinking of Escape from L.A.
That's a very valid point.
Yeah.
I was totally thinking of Escape from L.A. That's my bad guess.
I knew what you meant.
With the submarine,
yeah.
But so then, you know what I think is pretty good? And I know this movie is not the most popular, and we all like to make fun of it, but when we were kids, tell me you didn't crap your pants. Independence Day. ID4.
With the practical alien effects, like the puppets and stuff,
they
that was
great.
Done well.
That was Stan Winston.
But the compositing, and against also Men in Black, right? I mean, these are all like in the same...
Men in Black's
these
good.
Are all Will Smith.
Men in Black did do a very solid job.
Especially at the time. It was really good.
Yep. I mean, the worms...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Worms still look good.
Yeah.
The only thing that doesn't really hold up in Men in Black is the final Edgar bug. It's a little too shiny, plasticky, but that's the limitations of the time. And in fact, they wanted to do a full-size Edgar bug animatronic puppet on set, but then they decided at the last minute, you know what, let's just go CG. So that's one of the problems with why it looks the way it does.
Isn't it funny, though, that it's always the CG that wears down first? You know, it doesn't hold up as well. It's always the CG that crumbles under rewatch as opposed to the practical effects.
Right.
I mean, Jurassic Park's the same way. still almost perfect, but it is starting to slowly, the CG shots of the T-Rex, you're like, oh, okay, that's a little more CG than other shots.
Well, I think it's about the believability of when you're looking at something, because when you're looking at a practical effect, your brain is subconsciously saying, okay, what I'm looking at is actually happening. It may not be moving realistically. It might have a little wobble like a puppet, but it's physically there, so I believe it. Whereas like with CG, it's like, that's moving a little too smooth. In terms of like photorealism, it looks real. The lighting's right, the texture's right, but it's not moving right. It's easier for you to spot something that doesn't look right as right. opposed to filling in
for
the gaps,
my money,
making it work.
The fault of CGI is typically the lighting, actually. There's the peach-colored digital fuzz, which has been present for ages and is only now really starting to... You look at a film like Pacific Rim, I couldn't tell you where anything starts and ends there. I know that most of what I'm looking at is CGI, but honestly, I couldn't tell you what.
And so good, by the way, that I didn't even think of mentioning that film.
See, you know...
Well, exactly. That's what we're up against here. Some of them actually have succeeded, but we won't even know because we take it
for
granted.
You know when the really brilliant effects come in is when you see something, I'm just going to say something like out of Pacific Rim, where it'd be like, let's just say, for example, a huge wide shot, and you're looking at something unbelievable, and you're thinking to yourself later, oh, that whole shot was probably all CG. And then if you ever watch behind the scenes, it's like, oh no, just that giant robot with CG and maybe a couple buildings, but like all the millions of little people in the crowd, those were actually real people filmed on a green screen and put in later. You're like, what? Those kinds of effects always kind of blow my mind. When you're looking at something that you think is entirely just impossible, and then later they reveal it, oh no, a good chunk of it was actually done for real. One of those examples, I think, for me, is from the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy, like most of the stuff done with the Tumbler. That was a model car. I had no idea. I thought they did all that for real, full size. And then it's like, nope, that Tumbler was about the size of like, I don't know, what would you say? Like,
are you shitting me?
No, dude. Didn't you watch the behind the scenes?
No, I don't watch behind the scenes.
And you're why DVD sales have plummeted.
And during the Dark Knight.
I'll buy them. Like, I'll buy the special edition with the behind the scenes. I just.
So during the Dark Knight, the Tumbler chase where he's protecting the van that Harvey Dent is in.
Yeah.
And they do the thing where Batman goes past the truck and it spins and does the 180 and it comes back to catch the missile in time.
Yeah.
When it goes and does that 180, that's not the full size Tumbler. That's a model. It's not full size. Just watch the behind the scenes
and
you'll see.
I've seen a photo of that model. I just assumed that was like a mock-up. I didn't
know.
No,
dude.
They
used it like legit
camera.
For real. And like at the end of Batman Begins, when the train, you know, crashes into the parking garage,
oh, yeah,
all those are model cars. All those are model trains. It's not real.
Well, but I mean, they're not going to crash a monorail. Like,
of
they're
course.
Not going to build a monorail and then crash it.
Yeah, but the same thing, even for the thing jumping. All this stuff was models, and then they blended in, and then like they have a CG Batman, and the first Batman Begins, he jumps down the stairwell and he lands and he gets up and he walks away, and you're like, they CG'd a human and it looked that good when you're surprised like that. That's what gets me.
And the bats are great CGI, and like swarmy things are so good for CGI because
let's go so fast you don't really even see it.
Let me ask a question. If Jurassic Park was never made, what would you consider the greatest CGI practical effect mashup film ever?
I'd have to say at this point, honestly, Inception.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of practical car chases, the hallway fight, the opening scene where Leo is in, you know, Japan, like all of that was done mostly practical.
Right. And then the compositing. Yeah.
The grand visual shots that they did obviously use a lot of CG for, like it just blends really well together. Like it actually creates like a kind of an atmosphere for the movie using the two in conjunction.
Not to sound cheesy, but it's almost like a symphony.
Yeah.
I mean, by itself, you hear like an oboe or a clarinet and you're like, you know, those are annoying instruments. But no, it's true. But then like all together at the same time, you're like, wow, that's a beautiful piece you have there. And that's definitely that kind of thing. Like, especially with Inception, I think Christopher Nolan's two biggest merits are his ability to put the practical effects, like to use actual practical effects. Still, like, I mean, you're talking about his DP wanting to still shoot on film, and even better than that, shoot on IMAX. And then the second thing for Nolan is that the compositing itself, layering it, he clearly must put his effects houses through a lot of shit, because you can almost never tell that scene of what's being composited over. What about you, Doug?
That's a really tough. I'm unprepared. I was unprepared for the question. but one of the things that came to mind, I only saw it once, and although I didn't really care for the movie, I thought the effects were great, was Where the Wild Things Are.
Okay.
Because
very good.
Like they had the physical costumes on set, and they really just sort of animated the faces, and maybe did some digital like set expansion and stuff like that. But I was in it, man. I was in that movie. Like I was buying it. Everything that was happening, except for like a great beginning, great middle, and then it's like, well, what's going on? And then just sort of peters out, and it's like, oh, okay, they didn't really do whatever. But that's all right. I just wanted a longer version of the trailer, because that trailer, you know, knocked me flat. So, but it didn't quite do that. But whatever, the movie's all right, but the effects were, yeah, that's easily sticks out as a great example to me. Good old JJ working on the new Star Wars movies. Mm-hmm. We should save it for State of the Empire, but they're using real stormtroopers, whereas there were no clone trooper armor ever made for any of the films in the prequels. All the clone troopers were CG.
None.
Jesus. Yeah.
Fuck that guy.
They stated that with pride when they revealed that. Like, Lucas was actually very proud of that fact.
Now, back in the day, prior to Jurassic Park, T2.
Mm. Oh, there you go, yeah.
T2 was a winner. I mean, granted, T-1000 liquid metal, that was an easy effect.
Because he's supposed to look that way.
Right, but I mean, like, they designed a character around an effect,
yeah,
essentially. But it was very well done and still most definitely holds up today.
And when it becomes the actor, there's no real jump cut.
None.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because usually when you see that, you can kind of see where, like,
that's when they switched him out. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
You can't tell.
Yeah.
The only problem is, of course, in the editing room, that movie was a mess, but that's for another discussion.
Yeah. the whole behind the scenes, that's a whole other thing.
Self-healing windshields and things. and actually, if we're talking about computer effects, you know, James Cameron tried something where he was taking one frame, every other frame out, because you get that stuttered look. Apparently, there's like a full cut where like the whole movie is like that, and it's absolutely atrocious.
Why would you do
just that? For fun? I don't know.
Well, he's got some pretty big ideas about what must look good, like, you know, 60 frames a second.
Oh, how about on the almost, for me, on the zero end of CGI and practical effects, how about Avatar? I think Avatar looks awful. It looks like somebody layered a video game from 1999 on top of actual kind of footage.
I just take it as a cartoon movie. I don't even think of it in terms of like, oh, this is a film. It's like, well, this is a cartoon movie.
But it's not, but that's not how
that, that movie was such a product of like only being viewed well when it came out in a good theater with a good, like
3D.
It'll never look that good again.
I don't know if I can get as hyped for Pacific Rim without the big sound and the big picture and the IMAX.
It was a tour de force in the theaters, but the great thing about Pacific Rim is that it was a good movie as well, you know?
And it was a good film, I mean, as a storytelling and stuff, but it was that, man, it's that CGI and practical effects mix, and I'm really glad that this was a topic.
I should say that Guillermo, in general,
does,
I only use his first name because obviously we're very close.
Yeah, you mean Mr. Del Toro.
Yeah, Mr. Del Toro, he just genuinely does that pairing very well. The Hellboy films, Pan's Labyrinth, he did so many practical effects, you typically aren't sure where the CGI is in most cases. Mm. Granted, I haven't seen the second Hellboy in a while, and I recall there being some pretty big set pieces that were most definitely CGI, but I don't remember a memory being like, oh yeah, well, look at that.
And these are all films that took time to come out, too, when you think about it. They weren't rushed out or anything. Or
like Clash of the Titans or anything
exactly.
Just, like, they just spit it out as fast as they
they're
can.
They're not clashing. They're not clash. I almost said clashing. They're not cashing films. Like, you know, when you think about it, Pacific Rim came out at a time when big robots fighting big monsters wasn't really popular at the moment. You know, we didn't release it just because it was the hot thing.
It led the charge, and it took a risk. It took a huge risk, I might add.
And Godzilla probably would not have been as well received without that, I think. I wasn't ready for a Godzilla reboot, and then I saw Pacific Rim, and I saw, okay, maybe we can do this now. And then when I saw Godzilla, I thought it was true to the original films, and anybody who says there wasn't enough Godzilla has clearly never seen any of the original Japanese films, because they were always about talking heads, a scientist saying, let them fight, and all that stuff. It's like seeing a Western and complaining that the villains are too obvious because they're all wearing black and the good guy's wearing a white hat. I will defend Godzilla to death. The only thing I didn't like about it was the music. I think the music could have been a little more powerful.
Okay.
A little more Nolan-y.
Is there any other filmmaker who's really known for doing the really good effects?
Spielberg. But it wasn't good. I mean, we all saw Indiana Jones 4.
I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember actually being genuinely impressed by the work done on the E.T. remaster that everybody hates.
Oh, I was going to say, don't say the monkeys. But that wasn't him, though. That wasn't Spielberg, though. That's a team of remastering.
It wasn't him when he said, add the blinks and the effects to E.T. When they enhanced the E.T. animatronic with CGI,
to me, that's
maybe it
like,
looks terrible now, but at the time I remember thinking, oh, that looks pretty cool.
But to me, that's like attributing like the color version of Babes in Toyland to Ted Turner. You know, just because he colorized it doesn't mean he made the film good. He just colorized it. It's not the same thing as
being
known for
it. He directed the film and hired a team to enhance his work. I don't know.
What other movies did Spielberg make that had CGI?
War of the Worlds.
Oh, that was terrible. I mean, the compositing was really bad in that movie.
You know what? There was probably some really cool special effects in Lincoln, and we just didn't even know it had happened.
Hey, there you go. That's a thing.
It goes beyond film, but like a lot of HBO TV shows that are on the scale of film.
Dude, Game of Thrones.
And Boardwalk Empire, too. Like, most of that Boardwalk doesn't exist.
I was working on a future be named short film. We borrowed some radios, quote unquote borrowed, from Boardwalk Empire. And I had to go with a PA over to pick them up from the guy. It was like just this dock with like shipping containers. And I was like, oh, I thought we were going to see the Boardwalk Empire set. And he's like, this is the Boardwalk Empire set. And apparently what you know is, quote unquote, the boardwalk and everything is literally just shipping containers lined up that they CGI out.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's all it is just shipping containers.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Wow. There's our rough list of movies that perfectly pair CGI and practical effects. And there's probably more of them than we know.
And if we didn't notice and talk about them, that means
that's the highest compliment. Yeah.
Really fucking good.
Yeah. So if you're a little bit more hip to the recent special features than we are and can tell us about some great unsung compositing of CGI and practical effects, let us know. Comment on this episode's page or on our SoundCloud.
Of course, if you would like to decide what we talk about for 15 minutes or so, all you got to do is support the Nerdy Show Network. We're entirely listener supported, and you can fund us via one-time donation, or if you'd like to get microsodes and other perks alongside our extensive perk library, just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. Check out all the different awesome things we offer if you support us at different levels, and subscribe for monthly awesomeness. You can get a cool bite-sized discussion like this, or every now and then, our microsode plans get kind of out of hand, and things like what happened last week happened, where Twomper asked us to talk about professional wrestling, so not only did we interview Brian Knobbs of the legendary WWF tag team duo The Nasty Boys, but Brandon and I got in a wrestling ring with him, and he beat the snot out of us. So if you haven't seen that yet, you can follow the link on this episode's page. This month, Nerdy Show needs your help for something other than your casual donations or your generous purchases through our affiliate link at Amazon, nerdyshow.com/Amazon. We are applying for a grant. It's not your traditional grant application. It's kind of more of a contest. It's being put on by Mission Main Street Grants and Chase Bank. And 10 small businesses will be awarded $100,000. We want to be one of those small businesses. Our application's in, but the thing we need to get to the next level is your vote. There'll be a link on this episode's page, but you can also go to nerdyshow.com/grant to be redirected to a page where all you got to do is click a button. We need at least 250 votes to qualify for the judging, but the competition is steep. There's a lot of small businesses out here vying for that very sizable chunk of change, so we want to make sure that we get way more than 250. We need that Nerdy Show flag waving proudly. The one requirement to vote is you have to be logged into Facebook. Unfortunately, that's how they're linking everything together. There's no way around that. You have to have a Facebook account. Even if you don't, if you could just share the link, if you could pass it around and say, hey, I love Nerdy Show, all I need is a click, that would mean the world to us. But basically, this grant, it could take everything we've ever talked about, every long-standing project that hasn't come to fruition yet, and all of our best-laid plans, and give us the resources we need to accelerate them. I'm the only full-time staffer that Nerdy Show has, and even I have another job. We're still very much a grassroots organization. We're doing what we can to make sure that Nerdy Show can continue to grow so more of us can devote more time, put out more projects, and put those projects out faster, and keeping the awesomeness coming forever, ever, ever. But as things are currently, it's all slow and steady to win that race, and this grant could be a much-needed nitro boost. So follow the link on this episode's page, or go to nerdyshow.com/grant, and all we need is a click of the button. Maybe we get a grant, maybe we don't. Either way, we're not going to stop the Nerdy Show machine, but it's a possibility worth fighting for. Because that's a hell of a lot of money. Speaking of, we got some generous one-time contributions from the always awesome Kruger siblings, who via the ability to include a message along with your one-time donations at nerdyshow.com/support, do these awesome call-and-response messages. This one is one best read without pauses, but it was Ethan and Caitlin going back and forth to put this together. What can one wizard accomplish in just 15 books? Warlocks whacked, werewolves whipped, spooks stomped, fays flayed, curses crumbled, vampires vexed, zombies zapped, terrors terminated, incubi impeded, demons demolished, quizlings quashed, nations nuked, wraiths wrecked, queens checked, and swindlers swindled. Harry Dresden, wizard for hire, and Nerdy Show's next book club star, we hope? Well, Kruger siblings, we would certainly love for Nerdy Show Book Club to return. And like James Bond, it shall. Hopefully sooner than later. Nerdy Show Book Club is, of course, the reoccurring Nerdy Show episodes where Nerdy Show hosts, along with the community, read a book and also talk about the other stuff we've been reading. It's been on an unplanned hiatus for a while, and we would love to bring it back. In fact, we'd love to bring it back most on a regular, fixed schedule. The only way we can do that, however, is if we manage to reach our $1,000 a month Patreon milestone, which is the next milestone we need to reach, with you guys having just recently stomped our 700 milestone, enabling us to actually give back to all the other shows on the network. But it's likely to still be a while before we hit that milestone. I'm sure we can all do it together. But in the meantime, that doesn't mean that Book Club isn't going to come out. In fact, we're way overdue, and the list of books that I've read and haven't had a chance to talk about on the show is only growing. So that's got to get taken care of. That's like a sewer main ready to burst. So we got to do that. And as for the Dresden Files, well, something we've never tackled on Nerdy Show. Actually, if I remember correctly, there's a microsode related to the Dresden Files that we still need to do. So maybe we can all link these things together. We'll take it under advisement, Kruger siblings. In the meantime, everybody be sure to read Neil Gaiman's The Ocean at the End of the Lane, which, if you can remember back that far, was the next Nerdy Show Book Club book, because sometime soon, we're going to be doing an episode where we're going to talk about it. As for me, I read it, and I liked it a lot, but at this rate, I really should reread it before we do the show. Thanks so much for listening to me yammer on about all this behind-the-scenes Nerdy Show stuff. Remember to go to nerdyshow.com/grant, click that button, and then share it with everybody you know, and we'll see you next time. Taking us out is a track by Freeze Pop from their 2010 album Imaginary Friends. This is Special Effects. Just rearranged. You drank the champagne. You opened the doors with sleight of hand. But I was never yours. I see it through the magic and the views getting clearer. Smile realistic through the smoke and the mirrors. My eyes love what my brand new jacks. Never gonna fall for your special effects.
Smile realistic through the smoke and the mirrors. My eyes love for my friend in chance. Never Thanks for listening to Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes or like and follow us on SoundCloud. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. You can subscribe to Nerdy Show via iTunes and SoundCloud. Leave a comment, like and share, and follow Nerdy Show on all your favorite social networks. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. If it's geeky, we got it covered.